Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 394 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 21st of September, 2018, as I record this. And it's a very stormy time in England right now. The wind is howling outside and I'm in the cupboard where I normally record the intro. So today I'm talking about how to choose wonder over worry with Amber Ray. And we get into the mindset stuff, talking about self-doubt, comparisonitis, envy, ambition, creative dissatisfaction, and more. And I really enjoyed talking with Amber, and we have a wonderfully honest conversation. So I hope you find the interview useful. So in futurist stuff this week, we actually watched Ready Player One. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, it really is good. It's full of nostalgia, good soundtrack if you're in your 40s. Like me, but also a sort of blend of VR, virtual reality, tech, and some futurist stuff as well. So it really, I think it was a very effective movie. I haven't actually read the book. I don't normally read books like that. I'm not so much into sci-fi, to be honest, which is odd considering I'm into futurist stuff, I know. But I really thought the film was great. So Ready Player One. And straight after watching that, I listened to, well, the next day or whatever, I listened to the Exponential Wisdom podcast with Peter Diamandis, which I have, and Dan Sullivan, who's a coach. And I listen to that. I've listened to that podcast for several years now. It's excellent. Exponential Wisdom, if you want to listen to that. It is often about futurist things, longevity, which actually comes up in Valley of Dry Bones. It's all about a billionaire who's seeking immortality. So I may have been influenced by the Exponential Wisdom podcast there as well. But this particular podcast episode was about Peter giving a keynote in High Fidelity, which is a full VR environment designed by Philip Rosedale, the guy who invented Second Life. And it was probably about 10 years ago now that I started, I went into Second Life. I didn't gel with it, so I didn't get involved with it, but it's still going. And in fact, a friend of mine does make a full-time living designing clothing for avatars in Second Life. And what's interesting, I think, is it has become an environment where a lot of people still hang out, you know. So I think this VR space, you know, will continue to grow. And interestingly, this particular episode with Peter, he was giving a keynote within this VR environment, and he said it just felt incredibly natural and completely different to the things that he had been in before. He just felt immersed in that environment. So really recommend you listen to that. I think that the education space for VR is the huge growth area. That's certainly what Facebook are invested in with Oculus. There was even an article this week about Walmart rolling out VR training. It's being used in environments, you know, like, augmented reality as well, for training on things like aircraft and for doctors. So lots of things in terms of the education side. And since I am about to get on a plane to Florida, where I'm speaking at NINC, I know how bad my jet lag is, and it'll take me a week to get over the jet lag of being in Florida, when I will then get on a plane and fly back and have another week of jet lag. So as much as I love traveling, for these kind of short speaking things, doing stuff in VR, doing training in VR. And I mean, hopefully at some point I'd love to do book launch in the Paris catacombs. I've mentioned that before. Or perhaps you could even join me for podcast interviews. When I do these interviews, I could do them in a VR space instead of on Skype. And you could join me for live recording, live in inverted commas. So that to me is something very, very interesting. But it was great to hear Peter talking about it, because he's kind of on the cutting edge, or bleeding edge probably, of these types of things, in that he gets access to stuff that we don't get access to for a long time. Or, you know, I think he was saying 2 years, he thinks it'll be before people are doing these VR talks at that level, but that it may end up, you know, in the same way we do, we kind of do webinars, take them for granted now. I was doing sort of online training within my day job 10 years ago, and now webinars are part of our life online. And in the same way, I think this VR stuff, you know, me doing this in a VR space in 10 years' time is probably very likely. So go and check that out. Or if you just want to be entertained, watch Ready Player One, the movie. Okay, so on my personal update this week, I got my edits back from my fantastic story editor, Jen, and I have spent the week doing the updates and the final line edits. I have my printout out there by my desk. I've almost finished going over the line edits for the second time. What's so great about having a story editor, I think, is that it helps you realise that some of your thoughts were correct and others weren't. So there are some things that I thought I might have to do that she didn't pick up. So I'm like, okay, I can leave that. But a couple of things that I was like, yeah, I know I need to do that. There's one character that really needed expanding. So I've done that. And a couple of things that I totally agree with and has made the book better. And I love having a story editor as well, because there's a point where you just are so over the book. You're like, oh, I just can't stand this anymore. And yes, you could rest it yourself and then reread it later and you will learn a lot. But I like giving it to a professional editor, and the notes Jen gives me really helps make the book a lot better. And then basically I will make those updates almost finished, and then I'll send the book out to my beta readers, my proofreader, and these beta readers are very much just checking that I've got details right. For example, can you really hear the bird song from this particular bird in the Louisiana Bayou? Or is this really a good description of how Burns feel? So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Valley of Dry Bones is on pre-order right now on all the usual bookstores, and I'm just starting to organise promotion. And as this episode goes out on Monday, I will be at the airport as this goes live, heading to Florida, where I'm speaking at NINC, Novelists Inc. And it's a great conference at St. Pete's Beach near Tampa. And the schedule looks fantastic. I'm actually going to be taking a lot of notes, going to a lot of the sessions and learning a lot as well as speaking. It's a conference for professional novelists. So most of the sessions are advanced. You don't have to be doing basic stuff. So very much looking forward to that. Also networking. Lots of the show sponsors are going to be there, and it's going to be good. So I need to rest my introvert self for a few days, and then I will put my game face on and grab a gin and tonic, and I will be there, and lots of coffee, obviously. So I did want to say, if you are going to be at NINC, or in fact any conference where I might be, please do say hi. And if I have, some people will say to me, I have an expression on my face, which is don't talk to me. Okay, that don't talk to me face is my introvert protection face. It's like my armor. So if you see me wandering around and I have that face on, please do come and say hi anyway. I am just trying to sort of, I don't know how I have that. I normally smile, right? If you come up to me and say hi, I will smile and I won't be scary. But if you see me with my I'm an introvert, don't talk to me face on, please talk to me anyway. You can always tweet me first if you want to prepare the way at The Creative Pen. But please do say hi. And especially if you're a patron, you can claim your hug. So that will be fun. I'm looking forward to that. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and photos this week. Here's just a few of them. Ruth Amos said, today I listened to your podcast while driving to Deloraine, Tasmania for my first ever author research trip. New author achievement unlocked. That's fantastic. And I do love my research. And in fact, what's nice about revisiting Valley of Dry Bones and reading my chapters, say, in the bayou, I have a scene where Jake and Naomi do kayak through the bayou. And yes, I did that on a research trip with the intention of putting it into a book. So I'm really pleased to put that in. It was brilliant. It was definitely, if you go down to that area, Louisiana, definitely get out in a kayak. It's Brilliant. Okay, A.H. Johnston says, listening to the podcast on the walk to school to collect my three horrors, there goes my peace and quiet. And I'm sure that was tongue-in-cheek, A.H. I'm sure you love your three horrors. Thanks to Edwin, who sent me a picture of Lyle Cemetery. I always love getting pictures of gravestones and cemeteries all around the world. Or in fact, I should use a different word, like let's say places of burial, because I think cemetery is like a Christian word. But if you are in another culture and there are other places where people are buried or... I really like in Destroyer of Worlds, I have the Tower of Silence, which is where Zoroastrians put the bodies out to be eaten by the vultures, which is really cool, sometimes called a sky burial. So maybe don't send me pictures of that, but I don't think you can get in. But anyway, fantastic pictures. Thank you so much, Edwin. Rob Dirks, says, just got Vellum based on your recommendation and saved days on formatting a paperback. No worries, Rob. I love Vellum and I do have a tutorial on Vellum if you need some help on formatting, ebook or print. thecreativepen.com/Vellum, V-E-L-L-U-M dash tutorial. You can check that out. And finally, Stephanie from Grown Up Gap Year says, I'm listening to Tim Leffel talk about beautiful Guanajuato. I think that's how you say it. I might be wrong. While I'm house sitting here, guess that means I should move here as well. And beautiful picture from the very colourful town there looked really lovely. Okay, so today's show is actually sponsored because I was talking about editing. I thought today I would have the show sponsored by my list of editors, thecreativepen.com/editors. And it is a list of recommended editors, many of whom are vetted professionals and others are recommended by listeners, by yourselves and by people in my community, ranging from specialised story editors, historical editors, technical editors, non-fiction editors, content and structural editors, copy and line editors, proofreaders, beta readers, and much more. So I still work with editors after 28 books. I really, really appreciate having them. And I work with three or four different editors at different books, different levels, and I continue to improve my writing every time I learn something new. For example, this time, Jen actually really pointed out some of my past perfect tenses. And, you know, I try and learn something on every book and every edit. So I think the more eyes you have on your book before publication and the more you learn, the better your book will become and the more proud you will be of the finished product, which as indies, we want to be professional. I just want us to be as professional as traditional publishers. So if you need help improving your manuscript, check out the list. And it also has my own tutorial on how to find and work with editors. So check out the list at thecreativepen.com/editors. Right, so thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons Ashley Hayes, Alice Deegan, Leah Day, Tech Tools for Authors, Fiction Engine, and to Stephen Davidson for increasing his pledge. Now, I really do appreciate your support on Patreon, like your tweets and emails. It really helps me carry on with the show, and I know that you want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple more if you're feeling generous. And you can get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I sent out last week, and you'll get access to the backlist of several years worth more of audio if you're really desperate for more. So support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen with a double N. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Amber Ray. Hi, Amber.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Amber is an author, artist, and speaker, and her latest book is Choose Wonder Over Worry, Move Beyond Fear and Doubt to Unlock Your Full Potential, which is a message I know we all need to hear. So very excited about today. So Amber, start by telling us a bit more about you and your background and how you got into writing.
So I got into writing. My mom gave me my first journal when I was 5 years old, and I was hooked. I like to think it was maybe because I was an only child and because I didn't have siblings to talk to, I began to talk to a journal. And, you know, that practice stayed with me for a long time until I found myself so trapped by the chase for success and the hustle for approval, and ended up thinking there's no way I could make a living out of my creativity. You know, what am I going to be an artist? Artists, you know, are suffering and struggling and all the stories that our society has about the creative world. And so thought that, okay, well, maybe I can apply that to the world of advertising and branding. So worked with Apple in the brand world, then moved into the digital agency world, working with big brands on their global marketing campaigns, then hopped to Silicon Valley, where I was working with a bunch of tech startups. And while there, because I was in the world of tech, I began a Tumblr to really document my own experiences. And I had a lot of questions I was wrestling with at this point. And maybe it was, you know, I was in my early 20s wondering, who am I and why am I here? And how can I express my gifts and what's my purpose? And I was asking all those big life questions and thought, oh, well, I'll just use a blog, which was really for me a personal journal to begin to feel into and write into those questions. And really that's always been my process, is that through writing, I can reveal myself to myself. And that's helped me so much and move through challenges, questions, and things like that. So here I started this blog thinking that it was just a personal journal, and was surprised to find that a lot of other people were asking those same questions and began to build a following around these sorts of questions.
Mm. And so how did the book happen? Did that happen off the back of your blog?
Yeah, it happened, but a decade later. So,
quite off the back of the blog.
I mean, the blog, I ended up taking the blog and the following I was building there to quit tech and move to New York. And there I ended up working with Seth Godin to start a publishing company with Amazon. And so I moved into writing, but in a different way, where now I was shepherding other authors, worked with Stephen Pressfield and Derek Sivers and Seth on bringing their ideas into the world, and really got an inside look at where publishing had been, how it was changing, and what we could do to really bring ideas to market in a faster way. Mm-hmm. And so again, there I'm documenting my journey, documenting my experiences. And I feel like that was around the time, and actually Seth gave me the opportunity to write. We had 12 books in the Domino Project, and he was like, Amber, maybe you could write one of them. And this is when I became paralyzed by worry and fear. Mm-hmm. And I was not equipped to deal with it yet, because I really let it get the best of me. I thought, you know, I tried to come up with an idea. I shared something with him, and I was so sensitive to his feedback. There's who came up with this concept? She wrote the book, Tara Moore. Came up with the concept that within every creative, there is an artist, an editor, and an agent. Hmm. And the artist is the sensitive part of us that is really important in the creative process. And the editor thinks, okay, this is who it's for, and I'm now going to shape the material to serve who I'm writing for. And the agent is, okay, I'm going to promote it, I'm going to sell it, I'm going to get it out there. And what I didn't know then that I know now is that when Seth was giving me feedback, I was hearing it through the lens of the sensitive artist, not the editor or the agent. And so I then was like, oh, I guess I'm not good enough and this isn't worthy, and I'm going to now shrink and not write a book. So that was like when I feel like, though, that planted the seed in me of like, I know I want to write books and I don't know what it's going to take to get there, but I'm setting that intention with myself now. And another author that I went on this walk with in New York said to me that was really helpful. He said, you're writing the book right now because your life experiences are the material. Mm. And so even if you don't have a book deal, or you don't have an agent, or you don't know what the title of the book is, or even what the structure is, right now you're living the writing. And so I really approached my life that way of, okay, I'm living the writing.
Yeah. Wow. Great. And we're going to circle back to you, Seth, and the Domino Project and publishing, because Stephen Pressfield's been on the show 3 times. He's wonderful. And, but I wanted to just circle back on there, the life experiences in your writing, because it was so funny. I did the same as you out of school, you know, out of college. I went into the business world and did a lot of the stuff you did back in the 90s. And yet you've put some of that into the book that I certainly have not shared in my writing. We won't mention any examples, but I was like, oh my goodness, I recognize this way of trying to get people, you know, to think I'm good or whatever, you know, the stuff we do. And so that was really interesting to me. So I wonder now, because you've been journaling a long time and the book is so open, like, have you mined your journals from all those years? Did you go through your past? Because of course, who you are now is not who you were then, and use that in your, it's a nonfiction book, but it's also a memoir.
Yeah. I absolutely did mine my journals. And I, you know, and so much of my process was going back and looking and thinking, like, you know, because there's a point where you have distance from it and you forget that you struggled so deeply. But I was like, I wrote about this for like 19 journal entries. Like, you know, I like, and it was like this small thing. It took me 19 journal entries to have that aha moment, but like, whoa. Or like, actually, for years, I struggled with body image. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't even like, I knew that was a pain point in my life. Clearly, I experienced it. But when I was going back and reading through my writing, I was like, whoa, that was like really grabbing me by the throat. And so it was really interesting just to go back and to identify those core threads of struggle and how I was mm-hmm. able to move through it.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And so let's go into some of the common worries that people have. You know, what are some of the biggest ones that you covered and that you've suffered and that everyone listening will suffer too?
Yeah. So one that I found that was interesting, where whether I was meeting with a billionaire who had access to all of the capital and the resources in the world to do what he wanted to do, or whether I was meeting someone who, you know, fled a war, came into the country with nothing, was illegal, had to create all over their life all over again, lived in a tiny like house with a ton of people. There was this fear of, am I good enough and do I have enough to create the life that I want to live? And it was mind-blowing to me that when I was sitting there with this person who has access to everything, that was still suffocating them. And so, you know, there's this all-pervasive fear, which is just us as humans, where there's this fear of not being enough or not being worthy.
Mm. And it's funny because I reflect on this quite a lot, actually. You know, we're told or we're encouraged to have a daily gratitude practice for where we are. And I'm very grateful, I'm sure you are, for where we are. But equally, as creatives, I feel like there has to be a dissatisfaction. Because if you are not dissatisfied, like, I can't imagine that you feel this book is the end of your creative life.
Oh, like, absolutely not.
Exactly. Exactly. So to me, the not enough is really a struggle with balancing against ambition, like the good side of ambition and creative dissatisfaction. Now, you've worked with lots of authors and artists and speakers, and, you know, how do you think we can balance both of those things?
Great question. And I feel like, you know, there's a difference between am I enough and have I expressed enough of or given enough of what I know I'm capable of giving. And so I think they're different frames. And so if it's the am I enough question, often that will cause us to seek validation and approval outside of ourselves. It'll have us constantly hustling and striving and trying to do more to prove to ourselves that we are worthy and enough. And often, like, I think of this like top executive that I was referring to, you know, oftentimes for him, that actually came through a childhood story. There was a moment from his childhood where he took a situation to mean he wasn't good enough or worthy. And so he had spent his entire life trying to prove that that's actually not true. Mm-hmm. And so our work really began about, okay, well, let's actually look at that story and find evidence to prove that it's not true. And once, you know, and begin to rewrite the narrative that you've been telling yourself your entire life that's actually suffocating your joy. And so, you know, I think there's a difference where it's like, of course, like there's a creative hunger. When we have a hunger and a desire to create and make for both like the joy of it and the desire to express something inside of us, or maybe there's some dissatisfaction that gets us moving toward creating more. I think that's different because it's not coming from a place of, I am unworthy and need to prove that I am.
Mm. Yeah, I'm still pushing back against this one because the funny thing is I'm also at the moment, I listen to the Brené Brown books on audiobook and I'm just over and over again because I'm trying to get to grips with this myself. And I feel like I can talk to you because I know you've read all this same stuff and your book goes through it, but it's so interesting. I feel that the, also being writing fiction in particular, I feel like I read a book by Stephen King, and to me, to get to that point in my craft journey might take me another 40 years, you know, or maybe 25 years. He's 25 years ahead of me. So again, I am not enough. Do you see what I mean? I am not enough to be they call it the gap, you know, between where you want to be and where you are now. So I'm going to ask you, you know, again, to kind of go deeper on that answer. If we are trying to become better craftspeople, how do we balance that?
Well, if you're thinking, I'm curious for you. I want to dig deeper with you.
Yeah.
So if for you, what's coming up is that I'm not enough. I'm not as good as Stephen King. And so I'm going to build my craft. Tell me more about the conversation or what you're telling yourself around that not enough. Is it I'm an unworthy piece of shit and because I believe that my life sucks?
No. And I think,
okay,
and
so that's the difference.
Yeah.
And so like when it's like the actual internal conversation is I'm an unworthy piece of shit and I suck. And so I'm going to make destructive decisions as a result of that. And those decisions are going to actually impact humanity in a way when I have so much power and influence because I actually don't care because I suck and everything I do is going to reinforce my suckage. Like that's different than like, I want to grow and become the best creative that I can become. And that hunger is going to drive me. And yes, I see that. And I want to be like that, or that inspires me and I'm envious of that. I'm going to use that envy as inspiration. That is coming from a different place. That's coming from a desire to grow.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think it's something that is so difficult to manage and it's almost a daily resetting of, okay, I am enough right now and I'm giving what I can right now, but I know that my journey is still many, many years, which is great. We want it to be like be boring otherwise. But I want to come back on envy because I talk about comparisonitis on this show a lot. Amber just got this amazing book deal, you know, or whatever, but she's been on TV and like, you know, that this kind of comparison of where people are, or even me going, oh, Stephen King when he's Stephen King. So I heard you mention the envy map on the Being Boss podcast, which is really interesting. So tell us, how can we deal with envy in a more positive way?
So I think envy is such a powerful tool because envy illuminates. When we look at someone, we say, ooh, I want that. It's because it's speaking to something inside of us that wants to be revealed. So I feel like it illuminates our potential. And I know that for me, I have this exercise of an envy map and I like mapped every person that I was envious of. There's Elizabeth Gilbert because of her memoir style writing, Oprah because of her platform, Austin Kleon because he was able to take words and drawings and make that art. And I'm like, wait, this is art? Then I make art.
That's a good point on Austin. Yeah.
and Chloe Wade because of her like poignant poems. And basically, as I began to map every single human, like there was like 12 of them that I was envious of what actually I had is actually a unique blueprint to what makes me uniquely me. Because I was pulling something very different from every single person. But what it was just mirroring what wanted to come through me, the potential that I was stepping into me. And so I began to, okay, well, and this is actually part of why I approached writing my book the way that I did. Because my intention with my book was not to be raw and vulnerable and have a lot of memoir kind of stories. I was like, this is going to be a guide to move through worry and doubt. I'm going to like have a lot of client examples and like not talk about myself at all. But then I was like, why am I so like ravenously envious of every single female author who's written memoir? Oh, because that's the kind of writing style that speaks to me. That's how I learn. That's actually how I want to reveal my own self. And so I decided to really, you know, I think of my book as both a memoir, a map, and a manifesto, but I really decided to lean in around the storytelling and allow myself to be seen so that the reader can see themselves, which was the case for every author that really moved me. And so it was once I understand the points of envy, oh, actually, like if Austin Kleon is like this dope artist, like I'm going to start doing a lot more handwritten stuff because that's what I'm already doing anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it allowed me to really weave the elements, like it's almost like a permission map, like giving myself permission to be myself because I'm seeing it in other people.
Yeah, I really like that. And coming back on your branding background, I wonder how much of that envy map ended up in your personal brand. Like, were you then taking ideas from how these other people have portrayed themselves, I guess, in their branding?
Yeah, probably a little bit. The look, feel. I mean, some people I'd say there was only a couple of people on my envy map that actually like thought of themselves as artists. And I actually thought that helped me realize that because I see branding, because I'm a visual person, I can use that more. Cause most memoirists don't necessarily think about branding and visuals and the art behind the work. And so I was like, oh, actually that's a strength. Ding. You know, like that's something that I can really weave into what I'm doing. So it definitely helped me both identify what my sort of unique focus is, as well as what I want that brand to look like.
And then circling back on what you said right at the beginning around being an artist is not like a proper job and a proper career and you can't make any money. I'm wondering if some of those people on the envy map are people who are making really good money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because on this show, we do like to talk about art, but also about the money side. So how are you doing everything as a creative entrepreneur? Because we know that a book deal does not make a millionaire most of the time. Yeah. So what are the different strands that you are using in your creative entrepreneurship?
Well, what's so interesting is that when I declared myself an artist, finally, after like, you know, read The Artist Way 5 times, and like really working through those blocks, working through those stories I was telling myself about creativity and art. And I like, on my 30th birthday, I was like, I am an artist, and had this whole, I think it was my 30th, had this whole gallery reveal, a bunch of art. I have made more money since then than my entire life before that. And so I was like, oh, artists can make a great living. And so for me, it primarily comes through, I do a lot of interactive public art. So I've brought that public art and built custom experiences for brands. And usually I combine that with the talk. So like Kate Spade, client of mine, I went in, I did an all company meeting talk. And then I had an interactive installation for their employees it was an end of year thing to really to name the curiosity that they wanted to step into, because that's one of their core values in the following year. And so it's really combining art with speaking has been a big part of it. And then of course, you know, the book deal, I was fortunate to get a friendly book deal. So that definitely gave me space. And then now I'm looking into both physical products and online immersions and experiences. So people can go deeper into the material, because that's what people are asking for now. I love the book. Now I want more.
I'm like, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's so interesting because you mentioned Julia Cameron. If you look at her business model, that book, that was 25, 30 years ago now. And if you have a look at her website and what she does, she has obviously a lot more books around it, but she also still does workshops. Like that book has underpinned her whole career. And it is so interesting how that can happen. So, right, circling back to the book, wanted to ask you about, like, let's just get into the wonder, because I think like wonder is a really interesting word, and we're writers here. So the choice of word is very important. So why choose the word wonder, and what does it really mean?
Yeah. So I chose it, one, for the alliteration.
It is nice. Yeah.
Just wonder over worry, because of how that flowed. But also how this all started is that as I was beginning to step into my and really own my creative and my artist, I realized I had this asshole in my head shouting terrible things at me. And one day I was like, who are you, voice inside my head? And the voice said, I'm worry. And I was like, oh, great. Hi, worry. And then began to dialogue. And so much of my work is actually being able to name, build a character, and have a dialogue with our emotions. Because so much of, or these characters that represent our emotions. Because so much of the problem becomes if we're trying to repress, push away, deny, not allow a feeling to be present or to have a voice, it can show up in really destructive ways. And I, as a creative, I use all these emotions and these characters as fuel for what I create. And so when I can actually my perfectionist, you might find this funny, my perfectionist is a 30-something British woman named Grace who hails from London. And My grandma's British, so I think that's maybe where it comes from. And Grace wants everything in a very neat and tidy box. And so I, you know, if I'm writing, Grace will get really loud and be like, this is terrible. This is bloody stupid. And I'll be like, Grace, what's going on? Like, why are you here? And Grace will tell me, well, I just want a really high quality piece of book. And I'm like, great. Me too. We want the same thing. But here's the thing. I need to get messy in order to really be able to access that material. So we go get a massage while I get messy, and maybe I'll invite you into the editing process. And so it's like, I'm not like, you're like, because before my previous process was like, all of these critical voices are the enemy and my job is to get rid of and demolish them. Hmm. But that didn't work. And I realized that only caused me unnecessary pain. But instead, if I could like, and this is a whole, what's her name? The book is called Radical Acceptance. Tara Brach. She talks about, in her book, this like notion of inviting Mara in for tea. Mm-hmm. And basically the Buddha, there was like Mara, the devil, and like, he kept wanting to wreak havoc. And finally the Buddha was like, well, no, just invite him in and let him be heard. And so much of that, we can have that approach with inviting our uncomfortable or difficult emotions in for tea. So maybe anger is really pissed off, but like, what's the message that anger has? Or maybe anxiety is really nervous and there's something that anxiety wants you to know. So like, what does anxiety want to tell and reveal to us? And so I don't know what led me on this tangent. I'm trying to land the plane and I forgot what had the plane take off.
The plane was heading back towards wonder. Why wonder?
Yes, why wonder? Thank you. Okay, so then, of course, as I started to turn toward and actually dialogue with worry and these different characters, all of a sudden another one popped up. And that one was like, ooh, I feel drawn there. I'm curious about that. I wonder why anger is saying that. Let's look toward it. And I was like, who are you, awesome character, inner guide, friend and ally? And she was like, I wonder. And I was like, oh, I like you.
Did she have a special voice?
It kind of was like that.
Have you just, because we, you know, as fiction writers, we cast our characters a lot. Like my main character is Angelina Jolie in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Like that's who I picture when I write. Do you have like, you know, we know what Grace is like now. Does Wanda have like a look and feel?
Oh, there's the goddess who is like ethereal and all white and in the jungles of Bali. And she's like, here's the feminine way to write the book. And like, and then she has to be balanced by Mr. Moore. And Mr. Moore is like, we got to get shit done. And here's our deadline. And they like fight, but they actually love each other. And then there's Mama Jenny, who's I think my like inner Oprah, except 80 years old. And she's like, baby girl, here is why you're awesome. And so
I love this because the funny thing is on this show, everyone's listening. They all know what you're talking about because like we seriously, like my mom's a writer too. And she just takes dictation. She's one of those writers. She'll just dictate what her characters say. You know, they just talk. So yeah. This is totally what, are you going to write a novel just out of interest?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people have asked that. I think so. I feel really drawn there. And I've started to play with different ideas. And I had a mentor after he read my book. He's like, I could so see you like take one of the threads of this book, build the character, and I see it as a novel. So I also have an idea for a one-woman show where I would act out and dress up every character.
Oh, that would be cool.
And like, be the goddess and then be Mr. Moore and like, I don't know.
I do like that. And I like the idea of wonder. I had never really used that word before. I think many creatives would use the word muse. Like the muse would be that creative side and the curiosity. I think all of those things come under wonder, don't they? So I think that's really interesting. So I did want to ask also, you mentioned toxic worry and useful worry. So when does a useful worry become toxic, basically?
Yeah, I want to say one last thing to close what we just said. Mm. It just feels, I was on a podcast recently talking about the characters and it was more of a health focused podcast. And they're like, do people think you're crazy? Like, do you have multiple personalities?
Not on this show.
And my friend was like, no, you have multiple personality order. And like, you're creating order by like, but anyway, it feels really good to be like, oh yeah, everyone gets it.
Yeah, totally.
That was my worry voice talking. So back to toxic and useful worry. So, you know, we are, our brain is wired to worry, and biologically, worry really is here to protect us and keep us safe. And so we evolved, you know, when we were getting chased by tigers and worry was like, run, trigger the fight or flight response. You're going to feel the sensation of fear in your body because you're going to outrun that tiger and you're going to survive. The problem is that today, an upcoming deadline or a really meaningful project can be like that tiger in the bushes. And so we can run from something that's actually meaningful and important. So useful worry is the kind of worry that's like, oh yeah, hey, I have this deadline next week and it's really important. So worry is chiming in to tell me to pay attention and get it done. Or like, I felt a rush of worry 2 days ago because I have a talk in about 2 weeks that I haven't written. And worry was like, hi, time to write that talk. Just an FYI. And, you know, that's when worry is useful because it pushes us into action and it really has us move forward and make progress. Mm-hmm. But worry is toxic when it's those ruminating thoughts that spin and spin and spin and really prevent us from moving forward or taking action. And those are the sorts of worries that, you know, maybe there's a meaningful project that we want to pursue, but we get so caught in like, it's already been done. No one will care. I am not unique enough, or whatever our story is. And those are the sorts of worries that we want to tame and invite in the muse of wonder.
Yes. Invite back the wonder. No, it's interesting, isn't it? Because so much of, and I don't like balance. I feel like balance is, you know, is overrated, and that we, you know, a lot of us do quite, we get extremely into things, but this, that balance between letting worry help you get stuff done and then don't let it take over your life is just so important. But I did want, you do talk about overwhelm and, you know, and time management and stuff like that, but you've also been through this book, this crazy book launch, and I know how much you've done for this. So how did you manage the book launch process with, you know, did you totally throw out the book and not do what you say in the book? Or did you manage to like keep all your good practices?
I like to think that the book was an initiation process. And so I mean, every step of the creative process of this book challenged me and brought my own worries to the surface and was like, you're going to choose wonder, huh? And so, I mean, whether it was like the moment when I got my book deal, my publisher said, can you write the book in 2.5 months? And I was like, hell no, hell yes. And, you know, and I like somehow, which, you know, Parkinson's law, if they would have given me 6 months or a year, I think it would have taken the same amount of time. I'm so glad that I like really went in and went all in. And so, you know, that was, you know, just the process of writing in that period of time and feeling like I didn't have enough time. Actually, another character that created was this dog named Time that when I was freaking out would jump on my lap and tell me to pet him. So I'd be like taking breaths and petting Time and reminding myself that it's fine. And then of course the launch process and doing 100 interviews and having 30 events, you know, there were definitely things that came to the surface for me. I felt really, I had an incredible team, and, you know, I hear a lot of horror stories about the publishing world, but my publisher was so involved, so active and so engaged. And so I didn't really manage any details. If I had been managing the details, I probably would have fainted, fallen over, cried in a corner. But instead I really like, I was just in charge of showing up and being me, show up, be me, like do the stuff. And I actually got in a real flow with it. To the point where the surprising, the thing I wasn't expecting was like the post-publication blues. So after tour, after it was all out, after I'm like back in my apartment in New York, I was like, now what? I want to be with the people again. And like, there was a profound sadness. And also realizing that, you know, this book was such a big dream for mine. And then it actually happened. And I was like, I don't have to birth that dream anymore. What the hell am I going to do now? And so that was an interesting space to be in.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I've written a book on mindset called The Successful Author Mindset. And in the second half, I say, don't read this if you haven't published a book yet. And I have a chapter on that what happens after you publish a book. And it's so interesting because it does feel like that. It just feels like that. And I feel like circling back, we talked about creative dissatisfaction. That's when you need to go create something else.
Yes.
Totally.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's really interesting you had that. But On the book launch, because many authors listening, obviously, you know, some will have traditional deals, some are independents. But what have you found to be the best things for like moving the needle? I mean, obviously, you won't be able to see your book sales, but you can at least see your rankings and stuff like that. Have you got a sense for what's worked or what was a complete waste of time in terms of marketing?
High impact podcasts definitely move the needle probably more than anything else. TV and radio, I didn't see a huge needle, but more it was good for credibility, and that's important. And I had so many people tell me like, oh, I saw it at the bookstore. Then I like saw three friends post about it. Then I heard you on this podcast, and then they called me and bought it. It wasn't until they heard me on a podcast that triggered them to buy. So I thought that was interesting as well. A complete waste of time was I was trying to build out a circle program to really, which would be like a book club method, so people could gather community and the idea could spread beyond. I just had way too much on my plate and didn't have enough to really allocate toward doing that the right way, but spent a good amount of time and hired someone specifically to do that. So that was the like one like, learning. And then I had a number of friends who bought books, like 20 to 40 books, who were gonna, you know, give them out to their teams or as gifts or, and I went through, I don't know, I feel like bookstores might not like me for saying this. I went through indie bookstores to try to do this, which I thought would be better for rankings and whatnot, but it ended up being a complete headache. And I wish I would have just had people go to Amazon, which is what I know publishers, and I love the indie bookstores. I support them. I had one of the most meaningful things was going like the in-person events. While it doesn't scale, it was so important for meeting those super fans, for really engaging and having that live experience. And those definitely did move the needle, and the indie bookstore events were amazing. But in terms of like coordinating sales with friends who wanted to buy larger amounts of books to really push rankings forward, I actually like my Amazon numbers were like the lowest of all the, I think one of the lowest of all the ways that I sold the book, which is so unheard of. But because I was pushing the bookstore so much, I wish I would have pushed Amazon a little more.
That's really interesting, especially because, you know, traditional publishers often do want you to push things to bookstores, but specific stores, because that's how you get on the New York Times list. It's got to be sales at the stores that report and that type of thing. So it's really interesting. It's not really surprising that, you know, a millennial author would find the online channels to be effective.
But here's the thing, they didn't count toward the list.
Yeah.
It's like so many of them, because what happened is like, so like, you know, one brand bought $10,000 of books and in exchange for me to speak. And they ended up, the sale went through a distributor, and not, even though it was through an indie bookstore, it was through, which it's like these things I didn't know.
Yeah. And it's a game. Like, it's a game.
There was like nearly 1,000 books did not count. And we won't know until like 9 months from now. So like the numbers of what my week one sales, I love, but they're likely double of what was actually tracked.
Yeah. I was on the New York Times list, 5 years ago now, when they actually still had the digital list, and then they changed it all. Like they changed the rules because people like me were doing these things. Sorry about that. But it's just one of those, you know, the games that people play at book launch are really interesting. So it's good to hear that what you felt was effective, things like podcasting. Yeah. And it's evergreen, right? It's evergreen content marketing. So people might be listening to this who knows when. I mean, that's what's that's what's also so cool.
Instagram was big for me, but that's because I have a super visual Instagram and a core audience there. And that actually was more successful Instagram than my email list.
Wow.
Which I thought was interesting. But I think that's because of how even Gmail is putting, you know, emails in. I feel like most of my audience that's on my email has transitioned to following me on Instagram because I get more ongoing content there.
That's really interesting.
That was really interesting.
Yeah.
So
tell us what you are on Instagram so everyone can go follow you.
Hey Amber Ray.
Which is really, and Ray R-A-E.
R-A-E.
Yeah, just for anyone. Okay, so we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you, like, back to Seth Godin and the Domino Project. So I'm obviously a Seth Godin fan, have been for many years. I bought books through the Domino Project, and it was an interesting experiment, and then it kind of stopped. And Seth has done other publishing things, like I've got that massive, heavy book, What You're Gonna Do With That Duck, which is huge. So that's really interesting. interesting. But what do you think you learned about publishing, both back then in the Domino Project, but also through what you've gone through now? Like, what will you do differently next time? And any thoughts, I guess, on publishing?
With Seth, to be honest, I didn't learn as much about publishing. I learned more about how we get ideas to spread and how to create ideas that have a long tail. That was really what Seth was pushing, as well as like, how can he take us so far outside of our comfort zone? I mean, everyone had a breakdown at some point during the 6 months of the experience. It was more like of us stepping into and moving past our own fears, which, you know, honestly was what a lot of the content that we were pushing, you know, was about. So it was less about, because we were work, it was so new. It was with Amazon. Amazon was just, I think, pretty early in the publishing game. It was a total experiment there. And so I didn't really get my understanding of the traditional world until I was now working with my publisher, because when I worked with Seth, he had fully transitioned out. And, you know, the learning with them is that they're incredible at distributing books and getting them in the right places. Like, that is what they're best in the world at. And, you know, I do feel lucky that my publicist was able to get me 40 radio spots on live TV. She was able to lock in 2 speaking engagements for me. She went above and beyond. And so I think actually the big learning for me is that I wish I would have trusted my publisher more. Because, and I had to tell this to them at one point, because I went into it thinking that sounds terrible, that they don't know what they're doing. And that, like, kind of like, not to say that Seth said they didn't know what they were doing, but he was like, publishing's like, we're going to try to do another experiment and create something new. And so I was like, will the editor, you know, and I'd heard so many stories, will the editor actually be there through the editing process? Will the publicist actually try to lock anything? How involved will they be? And I thought I had to hire my whole team. And they were way more involved. So I think having that sort of partnership and collaboration from the beginning and getting really clear on how we together are going to really blow this up, that's going to be my biggest learning for next time.
That's great. So do you have another book starting to bubble?
I do. I can't tell you about it yet, though.
No, exactly. But it's that, I think, and that's the important thing about that creative dissatisfaction, because, like, the only way through it is to create something new, which is very exciting. Okay, so we're out of time. Where can people find you and everything you do online?
So, as I mentioned on Instagram, I'm Hey Amber Ray, and you can learn all about the book at choosewonder.com, and my personal website blog is amberray.com. And again, that's RAE.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Amber. That was great.
This was so fun.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Amber Ray today, and that you focus on choosing wonder over worry as we move into the autumn or the fall season and head into what can sometimes be a little bit stressful, but also creative time. So next week, I have a fantastic interview with Dave Chesson from Kindlepreneur on categories and keywords. And Dave's tips have helped me a lot, so I know you'll find it interesting. And remember, if you need an editor, check out my list at thecreativepen.com/editors. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.